Well, anyhow, we'll go right into the message here. Kind of interesting that we saw the Beyond Today program this morning on demons and stuff, because you know the last Bible study I gave, we kind of talked about Satan. The last sermon I gave here, we talked about Satan. And just continuing on that theme just a little bit more today, the title of my message today is, Where Are We Now? In light of everything that's going on, you know, in light of, you know, all the things that we read about. And if you read Scott Ashley's report, all the things that's going on in our society, in our government, and around the world, you know, where are we now? We think about Jesus Christ's prophecy, his Olivet prophecy, which of course is a prophecy that we're all familiar with, that Jesus Christ gave very shortly before he died. And he talked about some signs that would precede his return. He talked about some things that were going to happen. So what about those signs? What if we look for evidence of them now and how they're being fulfilled, and what can we learn and maybe even determine where are we now as far as the trek through time? You know, Jesus Christ in his Olivet prophecy, which is recorded, of course, in Matthew chapter 24, Mark chapter 13, and of course also in Luke chapter 21, so foretold major events and trends that would increase in intensity before he came back. Those trends are emphasized, were, of course, religious deception and wars, famines, disease epidemics, earthquakes, storms, things like that. Jesus Christ said those things were going to happen, and with greater intensity as time marched on. So it's probably especially apparent in response to his disciples' inquiry concerning what signs would precede his return and the end of this age. We can look at that in Matthew chapter 24, verse 4. Maybe just to start out here. Matthew chapter 24 and verse 4. Matthew chapter 24, verse 4. And reading through verse 8. And Jesus answered and said to them, take heed that no one deceives you. Wonder why he said that. Wonder why he said, take heed that no one deceives you. I would suppose it's because he knew that there would be plenty of forces around that would try to deceive people. You know, like we heard on the Beyond Today about an undercurrent of evil, the demons that walk this earth even now. For many will come in my name, saying, I am the Christ, and will deceive many. So he's saying there would be a lot of imposters. There'd be a lot of people coming around claiming to do Christ's work, you know, claiming to preach what Jesus Christ wanted preached. And then you will hear of wars and rumors of wars. See that you are not troubled, for all these things must come to pass. But it says, but the end is not yet. It says, for nation will rise against nation, kingdom against kingdom, and there will be famines and pestilences and earthquakes in many places. But then it says, all these are the beginning of sorrows. It says, all these are the beginning of sorrows. Now, we have to realize that all these things that he was talking about here, wars and famines and pestilences and those things, have existed to one degree or another through that whole 2,000-year period. There hasn't been many years in the last 2,000 years where there hasn't been at least some of these things going on. There's been wars for 2,000 years. There's been disease epidemics for 2,000 years. You know, there's been earthquakes and all kinds of things like that. I mean, it's nothing new. We can't look back and say, oh, well, 100 years ago, look at all these things started, because they've been going on for actually a couple of thousand years, and even before that. All those things have existed for some time now. So what about religious deception and confusion? Christ mentioned that. Religious deception and confusion. We can all probably think back, maybe, If you've been around it long enough and remember a familiar name, Jim Jones. Remember that name? Many of us do. Most of us do, probably. And what happened down there where all his people drank Kool-Aid, I think it was, with arsenic in it or whatever it was. And hundreds of them died. And then leap ahead of 20 years maybe, and we think about another Heaven's Gate. Remember that one? Heaven's Gate? That was out in California. And they had, you know, we saw pictures. I'm sure we all saw pictures of all these rows of beds or bunks or whatever, and these people all kind of neatly laying underneath blankets and their tennis shoes, but they were all dead. And then probably we can think about something that happened down in Waco, Texas. Remember that? The Branch Davidians, where they ended up getting burned up. I'm not sure that was handled the best it could have been handled, but the government finally went in there with tanks and burned the place down, and a number of people got shot and people got killed. You know, I've been in Waco, Texas. I've attended services in Waco, Texas. I've even preached a sermon or two in Waco, Texas. But we remember those kind of disasters that happened. But these tragedies certainly were newsworthy and made the news because charismatic leaders, you know, people that seem to have the ability to stand up in front of people and convince them to do almost anything, you know, even drink Kool-Aid to die, you know, or you end up dead. People that had the ability to do that led their followers not to life, but death. You know, I wouldn't want to follow somebody that was going to lead me to death, and yet hundreds of people did it. Kind of makes you wonder. Now, that wasn't the only kind of deception that Jesus talked about, of course. Even in the early days of the church, Paul warned about all the, you know, you remember, all the deception that they said was going to come into the church very early on, and of course it did. You know, we can look at, some scriptures that talk about that. We can look at 2 Peter 2:1, you know, kind of way in the back of the book, 2 Peter 2:1. Religious deception, of course, there's nothing very new about that. But 2 Peter chapter 2, verse 1, it says, "But there were also false prophets among the people, even as there will be false teachers among you who will secretly bring in destructive heresies, even denying the Lord who brought them and bring on themselves swift destruction." So, was nothing new, you know. The things that are happening now, there's certainly nothing new about that. Deceitful workers, and also we can look at 1 John chapter 4, verse 1, you know, way back in the back here. So we can look at 1 John chapter 4, verse 1. Several different places here we see where Christ told us or warned us, or it was written, of course, by the apostles and the disciples, the apostles, about some of these things that we could expect, so that actually came to be. 1 John chapter 4, verse 1, "Beloved, do not believe every spirit, but test the spirits whether they are of God, because many false prophets have gone out into the world." And he also reveals the power behind all those deceptions. If we look at Revelation chapter 12, verse 9. Revelation chapter 12, verse 9. We're way in the back of the book here, so we're pretty close. Revelation chapter 12, verse 9, where it says, "So the great dragon was cast out, that serpent of old called Satan and devil who deceives the whole world." It says he was cast to the earth, and his angels were cast out with him. You know, we were hearing that in the program. Cast down onto the earth, the great deceiver, it says, who deceives the whole world. So that's some pretty sobering words for us to think about. Kind of false apostles, deceitful workers, transforming themselves into apostles of Christ. You know, we could even look at 2 Corinthians 11:13. Very quickly here. 2 Corinthians 11:13. " 2 Corinthians chapter 11 and verse 13. Second Corinthians 11 and 13. We'll read a couple of verses here. For such are false apostles, deceitful workers, transforming themselves into apostles of Christ, and no wonder. For Satan himself transforms himself into an angel of light. Therefore it is no great thing for his ministers also transform themselves into ministers of righteousness, whose end will be according to their works. I think they've used that scripture in the program that we just got done watching. So we have plenty of warning. We have plenty of notice that that's how things are going to be. And it's going to even infiltrate the church. You know, there's about 2 billion people on the earth that claim to be Christian. About 2 billion people. That's, you know, about a fourth, somewhere around a fourth of the human population. Why in the world are they so divided, though? Why is it that almost any town you go into, you can find a church, you know, about every second street corner, there's a church. And most of them will claim to be Christian. But yet, none of them, you know, why isn't it just one great big church? All say they're Christian. Probably go into most of them, you know, a lot of them have a Bible sitting up on their altar there. You know, same book and all of it. And yet they can't get along, they can't agree. You know, is that kind of an indicate a little bit about all the confusion that Christ said there would be? And all the influence of, this unseen spirit world that we heard about in the Beyond Today program? You know, oh, Satan loves to confuse. Satan loves to muddy up the water. And it's been going on ever since Jesus Christ walked the earth. To one degree or another. And look at today. Look at the way things are today. It's probably never been as confusing as it is today. You know, with all the, actually thousands of church denominations. Actually thousands of denominations all claiming to follow Jesus Christ. All claiming that they get their beliefs right out of the Bible, the Holy Scriptures. And yet they hold a bewildering variety of contradicting beliefs and practices. Why in the world is that? Isn't that kind of strange? But that's the way it is. I mean, that's actually the way it is. You know, I was going to look in our, you know, the yellow pages in Mankato sometime and just see how many churches were listed, but it's page after page after page. All believe something a little different. And there's even confusion within certain denominations. You know, the Lutheran Church has their Missouri Synod and their Wisconsin Synod, and we had a neighbor one time that was interested in a girl from some other synod, I guess it was, but they couldn't get married because he was from this synod and she was from that synod, and it was still the Lutheran Church, but they couldn't get married because it was, I don't know, for whatever reason. So there's confusion and friction even within some of these various denominations. And it's kind of mind-boggling, I guess you could say. So that's all part of the religious deception and confusion that Jesus Christ himself foretold. We hear about wars and rumors of wars. World War I was supposed to be the war to end all wars. Did you ever hear that? War to end all wars. World War I. 8 million people died. 8 million people died. But what happened a generation later? You know, generation later. World War II happened. And 10 times as many people died in World War II as died in World War I. 70, 75, 80 million people died in World War II. Terrible slaughter. Horrible time. I was alive during those years, but not old enough to really know what was going on. But we've read, you know, probably seen, read about it and seen videos and things of Even troop ships, you know, there's big ships loaded up with troops heading overseas, and then, of course, a U-boat comes along and sinks them. And I mean, it's terrible, horrible. All the people that died and all the destruction that was wrought. But, you know, talk about wars. Well, we think about big wars like that. You know, we think about World War I, we think about World War II. But what about all the other wars that have happened? What about all the hundreds of thousands of people that have died, you know, in Korea and in Vietnam and in Afghanistan and Iran and Iraq and Somalia and all these other countries? It continues to this day. I mean, they're fighting today. There's dozens, sometimes dozens of little skirmishes going on around the world at any one time. You know, when I was in Korea in 1965, I know we were building a new building on our company area there, and we were digging up the footings. Well, we weren't, but there's some construction people there digging the footings for this new building, and they dug up a skeleton right in our company area, right where dozens of people were walking around every single day. No idea that those bones were there until we dug the footings, and there was these bones they found. And they, of course, called the medics, medical corps. And they came up there and continued, you know, finished digging this person out. It was an American GI. Could tell by his boots, could tell by his, you know, he still had his weapon, still had his rifle and his pot. And I think he had, I think they found dog tags so they could identify him. Knew who he was even. And that was 10, 12 years after the war ended there. But, you know, there's hundreds of unaccounted for soldiers, not only in Korea, but, you know, Vietnam and all over. World War I, World War II. There's lots and lots and lots of people that were never accounted for. Where are they? You know, we walked right over this guy's grave every day, never had a clue that he was there. Just by just plain old accident that we found, that he was found. So, hundreds of people probably never know where they are until the Great White Throne Judgment, probably, and they get a chance to wake up, you know, and come back to life. But there's so many, 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 many people. Vietnam, Afghanistan, all these different places. But, you know, there's, when we think about wars, we think about nations fighting each other, you know, bombing each other, shooting each other, blowing each other's property into smithereens. But there's, think about all the wars that go on in people's families. I mean, just think, this whole world is basically a war zone where families, you know, parents don't get along, kids don't get along, aunts and uncles don't get along. My dad and his brother, which would be my uncle, they never spoke for years. I don't even know my cousins. I know who they are. I really don't know them. We don't have anything to do with them because we always grew up in thinking they were really bad people. That's what my dad told us. Now my uncle's gone, my dad's gone, and I rarely see my cousins. I might see them at a funeral or something. That's about it. And some of them live right a few miles from Mankato. Never see them. We have, you know, the war on drugs. And you think about it, the whole creation is at war, basically. You know, you think about the seal that the church has where the lion and the lamb lay down together, you know. And why is that such a big deal? Because now they sure don't. I was watching something I saw just a week or two ago on one of the History or Discovery channels or something like that. But it showed how seals, you know, seals, they're kind of cute little animals. You know, you always think they're kind of fun to watch and everything. But it showed how when they would dive into the water, these seagulls would land on the water, and these seals would go up and grab these seagulls, not to eat the seagulls, but it ripped them to shreds so that the fish they had eaten would come out, and they could eat those fish that the seagulls had eaten. And then when the seals went back to wherever they were supposed to be, they said that barely half of them would get back because the sharks came in and took the seals. And then for every seal that the sharks got, if it was a female, why, there'd be a baby seal that didn't have his mother come back, so there'd be another creature that would die. And that's how the whole creation is. You know, if you've ever watched movies or documentaries or whatever you call them, on even insects or reptiles or life in the sea, it's just, you know, you say, oh, those are such pretty fish or pretty animals or whatever it is. And they're just a heartbeat away from getting ate up by somebody else. That's how the whole creation is. You know, if you ever, you talk about scary things, you know, look at these documentaries that they have on insects. You know, what insects? Why, that's the most savage world that you could possibly imagine. Tearing each other to shreds at the, you know, just on sight. But that's the creation right now. That's the polluted creation right now, at war with each other. Dangerous, dangerous, dangerous place to be for almost any kind of creature. And it's all going to get changed someday. But that's the way it is right now. I mean, it's something to think about. According to some estimates, why, the 20th century alone saw more people die than all other wars combined. All the other wars that have ever been fought. It's estimated. I suppose there's no way to know for absolutely sure. But with World War I, World War II, and Korea, and Vietnam, and all these other places where all these wars have gone on, more people have died in the last 100 years than in all other wars that have ever been fought. And when we look at, you know, 50, 60, 70, 80 million people dying in just one war, it's not hard to believe. When Hiroshima was destroyed by an atomic bomb in 1945, the guy that was commander of the B-29, it was Colonel Tibbets, I think his name was, and he flew a B-29, it was named the Enola Gay, and it carried a bomb that was powerful enough to destroy a city. And we think that that's, you know, pretty amazing that one bomb could do that. But today, the commander of a single nuclear submarine has enough destructive nuclear firepower on board to take out 150 cities. This country has a submarine. It's called the Trident. You've probably heard about the Trident submarine. A few years ago, we had like 17 of them, something like that. I don't know how many we've got now. Probably Obama got rid of most of them, but we had 16 or 17 of them at one time. And each one of those submarines had the power, more destructive explosive power in it than all the power of all the bombs, including Hiroshima and Nagasaki, that were exploded in World War II in one sub. Under the command of one skipper. That's enough to bring pretty much any country to its knees. Now, that's just one submarine that's got that kind of destructive power. And we have, if we still have them, 17 of them. And that's just this country. And we also have the warships. And we also have the airplanes that can deliver nuclear, you know, the B-1, even the B-52. The old workhorse, the old B-52. We've got dozens and hundreds of them. In fact, during the Cold War, and I'm not sure what the status is right now, but there used to be 12, 14 B-52s in the air at any one time, every one of them with a nuclear bomb in it. Every one on patrol, coming and going, landing and taking off, rotating around with 15, 16 B-52s, all with nuclear bombs in her belly, and they were all just on patrol, and all it would have taken was a word to send them out to wherever. And maybe we still do that. Probably still do. So the world's a pretty dangerous place. And that's not to think about all the artillery, all about the you know, the silos out in North Dakota, out in Montana, out in Wyoming, or the trailer launch missiles. You know, we've got they've got missiles now that they can actually pull around with a truck or put on a rail and move to different places to launch nuclear warheads. It's pretty dangerous. It's a pretty dangerous place. And if you notice the, if you probably haven't gotten that far, but in the news article by Scott Ashley that was attached to the announcements this week, there's an article in there about China and her entrance now into the nuclear submarine, arena. It was just the United States and Russia. China's joined it now. And she's got, I don't know how many. I think she had 3 or 4, and I'm sure they'll be building more right along. So the world is arming itself, rearming itself to the hilt. And is it any wonder that in the end it say that no living thing could survive unless Jesus Christ returned? We could look at that scripture in Matthew chapter 24:21. And probably it would be pretty hard to understand that scripture until, the last 75 years maybe or something. Matthew chapter 24:21. Matthew chapter 24, verse 21. For then there will be great tribulation such as not been since the beginning of the world until this time, no, nor ever shall be. And unless those days were shortened, no flesh would be saved, but for the elect's sake, those days will be shortened. So Jesus Christ was telling about a time that was coming when they could destroy all the life on the face of this whole planet, and that probably couldn't have been understood, in 1850 or in 1750 or in 1650, where they just had clubs and spears, and then they got gunpowder, and then they run around with bayonets and so forth. But it never really probably made a lot of sense until 1945 when Hiroshima went up. And they began to see what kind of power there was. When he blew Hiroshima up, the emperor of Japan said, they've only got one bomb. We're not giving up because they've only got one bomb. And then a little bit later, when Nagasaki went up, all of a sudden he found out, they've got more than one bomb. Now, we only did have two. But he thought we had one, and we had two, and so then he didn't know. Maybe we had three. And we kind of led him on to believe that every few days he was going to lose a city unless he gave up, and so he finally signed the peace treaty, finally. What a way to live. What a way to live. So it's only been within recent decades that this mankind had the destructive capability to literally exterminate all human life, not just once, but many, many times over. Many times over. So what will the last great war before Jesus Christ's return bring? Well, according to the Revelation in Revelation chapter 9, verse 13, we can read that, but it's going to be the dead are going to number into the billions. Revelation chapter 9, verse 13. And that kind of blows our mind. Revelation chapter 9, verse 13. How far down things are going to get, far down things are going to go. Revelation chapter 9, verse 13. And let me read a few verses here for you. Revelation chapter 9, verse 13. Then the sixth angel sounded, and I heard a voice from the four horns of the golden altar, which is before God, saying to the sixth angel who had the trumpet, release the four angels who are bound at the great river Euphrates. Kind of makes you wonder what goes on in the spirit world, doesn't it? Remember I talked about the other time, I don't know whenever it was, but what's going on behind the scenes that we have no clue, just don't know. But here it says, what does that mean? The sixth angel, and I heard a voice from the four horns of the golden altar, which is before God, saying to the sixth angel who had the trumpet, release the four angels who are bound at the great river Euphrates. Now, these things exist, and it says, but they're supposed to be released. So the four angels who had been prepared for the hour and day and month and year were released to kill a third of mankind. Now, the number of the army of the horsemen was 200 million, and I heard the number of them. And thus I saw the horse of the vision, Those who sat on them had breastplates of fiery red, hyacinth blue, and sulfur yellow, and the heads of the horses were like the heads of lions, and out of their mouths came fire, smoke, and brimstone. And by these three plagues, a third of mankind was killed by the fire and the smoke and the brimstone which came out of their mouths. So what's coming ahead of us is going to pale anything that's happened before into just insignificance when we think about what the scripture says is going to come. So what will that last great war before Christ's return brings? Well, you know, we saw it's a third of mankind. Well, if there's 8 billion, you know, 2 billion plus, maybe. Lots and lots and lots of people. So it's hard for us to imagine that, but it's talking about that. So with the developments of some of the things that we've seen, you know, the nuclear weapons. But on top of nuclear weapons, there's chemical weapons. There's biological weapons, you know, with disease epidemics. How long would it take disease epidemics to spread? Look what happened, you know, the bubonic plague. Look what happened, you know, in World War I. There was a influenza that went through the population in 1918, and it killed almost three times as many people as the war did. You know, the war killed 8 million people. This plague that went through the population killed, I think, close to 20 million. That was a disease that got loose. And who knows? You know, we know that the enemies of this country, and this country too, we have all these, you know, anthrax and all these things that we've got. And who knows what's going to happen? They talk about, you know, some of these terrorists don't think anything of strapping on a belt full of explosives and going into a crowd and blowing themselves and everybody else up. But the worry is now, what about if somebody that don't care about themselves, or, you know, they're going to sacrifice themselves anyhow, but what if they had anthrax? What if they had the bubonic plague? Or what if they had smallpox? Or what if they had Ebola or something like that and got into the population, let's just say our country, and circulated in some of these places where the huge numbers of people, you know, like an NFL football game where there can be 100,000 people. Or like you go up to the state fair or something where there's thousands and thousands and thousands of people, all of them just circulate and spread this stuff. What would happen? And do that all over the country. Because these people, whether they blow themselves up with a bomb or whether they, you know, die of anthrax, what do they care? They could probably do a whole lot more damage by maybe with biological than we could even do with nuclear. So who knows the kind of staggering casualties that the scriptures talk about. Well, it talks about famines too. It talks about famines. You know, back in the 1960s and 1970s, there's a tremendous drought. And not only the drought, but populations were exploding almost out of control at the same time through India and through Africa. And millions of people died. And then we find out that same thing happened in China. And millions of people died. I mean, the same thing happened in the Soviet Union. Untold millions of people died. And Cambodia and Ethiopia. It talks about wars aftermath and the communist takeover of these nations where the infrastructure was wrecked. And people couldn't grow crops. And if you can't grow crops, you don't have food. If people don't have food, they starve to death. That's just the way it is. And people by the millions died, and that's not that distant of a past. You know, famines don't have to be caused strictly by natural conditions. You know, we think, well, famine, okay, it's a drought. You know, we think, oh, okay, a drought. It doesn't rain, so we can't grow. And, of course, that's certainly one of the big factors, but there's other things, too, that can cause droughts. You know, it could be some of the policies and some of the practices that happened when some of these communists took over some of these nations. You know, the economies were disrupted. Transportation is disrupted. Agricultural cycles are disrupted. You know, where the roads are wrecked and the railroads are wrecked. And you can't get fuel. So even if the farmers have equipment, they can't get fuel. Maybe they can't get seeds. You know, stuff like that happens. And so agriculture is ruined. And so crops can't get grown. All those things have happened and could easily and probably will happen again to disrupt the agricultural cycles. There's been widespread famines and hundreds and thousands of people have died in Africa recently, in recent years. And it appears it's only a matter of time before a surging world population produces another round of food shortages. We're kind of right on the edge, you know. We just kind of hang on. Just any major disruption could spell a tremendous disaster very, very quickly. You think about in the last century, the world population has quadrupled. What have we got now? Seven billion or more? You know, that's a lot of people, and the population grows quite rapidly. It says that 80 million people are added every year to this world. That's 10 times the population of Minnesota. So every year, 10 Minnesotans are added to the population of the world. Another billion people will show up every decade. And at that rate of growth, the global population will double in 50 years. So if we're at, just say, roughly 7 billion, that'd be 14, 15 billion in 50 years. You know, there's a number of people in this room that'll be alive in 50 years unless Christ comes back in time, or the world lasts that long. So what would the world be like if it had that many people on it? You know, I think it's crowded the way it is. But we don't even know what crowded is. Probably find out, though, if the world goes on and nothing happens to disrupt that population growth, like a war, or diseased epidemic, or something like that. So the rate of growth, yeah, the global population says will double in 50 years. But what's troubling is most of that population growth is going to happen in countries that can ill afford it, that can't take care of the people they've got. And that's where most of the population growth is going to happen, in the nations that are already stretched to try to take care of the people they've got. And so if the population growth explodes in those nations, what's going to happen there? If they can barely take care of what they have and they have a, you know, doubling of the population, what do you suppose is going to happen there? You know, all these things are looming right on the horizon, pretty much at any one time. Now, the situation is so tenuous that weather disruptions in food-producing areas could immediately bring food shortages. And here's something kind of interesting. An overlooked factor in our weather patterns is the relationship between people and God. Remember how many times we've mentioned that when God starts to try to get a hold of a nation's attention, he does it with weather. He does it with weather. Lots of scriptures that would indicate, well, let's look at one. 1 Kings chapter 8. I want to go on back to the Old Testament here. 1 Kings chapter 8 and verse 35. First Kings chapter 8 and verse 35 and 36. First Kings chapter 8, verse 35 and 36. If you're not there yet, let me tell you what it says. First Kings chapter 8, verse 35. When the heavens are shut up and there is no rain, because they have sinned against you, when they pray towards this place and confess your name and turn from their sins because you afflicted them, then hear in heaven and forgive the sins of your servants, your people Israel, that you may teach them the good way in which they have should walk and give rain on your land, which you have given to your people as an inheritance. So there's just one example out of many, many, many examples in the scriptures of God dealing with a nation through weather. Take the rain away, you have droughts. Well, what about this country? If you don't have to look too hard to see what's going on with the weather in this country, the last 10 years, the last even 20 years, you know, it's not normal. I remember when I was a kid, you usually got pretty good weather in the spring to get your crops in. You usually got pretty good rains over the summer so that they did pretty well, and then you usually get enough dry weather in the fall to get them in. Well, that doesn't happen as good as it is, like it used to. You know, when we have a war on God, you know, if you remember the Good News magazine that we just got, and if you've read it, I hope you've read it, or you're in the process of reading it, but it talks about how this country is absolutely not just ignoring God, but it's at war with God, doing everything it can to kick God out of everything. And not only kick him out, but to put up walls so that he can't get back in and nobody else can. Now, here's the thing. If God created the heavens and the earth, and our known universe is about 17 or 18 billion light years across, just what we know about, and we live on a little speck of dust on the outer edge of one of the spirals in the Milky Way galaxy, what chance do you suppose we have of thumbing our nose at God and telling him what he can and can't do? I mean, it probably isn't all that good. You know, he's probably got a little bit more power up his sleeve than we have, speaking of the humanity, not us as a church or a group. But it just seems so ridiculous. And it all comes down to the fact that, you know, Satan has deceived. Remember the scriptures we read? Satan's deceived the whole world. And especially our leaders. We've got probably the poorest bunch of leaders that this nation's ever had, as far as doing whatever they can to kick religion, well, Christianity in particular, out of this nation. You know? So knowing what we know about what God did to ancient Israel, whenever they thought that they were going to thumb their nose at him, time and time again, and never once failed, that the nation of Israel thumbed their nose at God, God brought them down, put them in captivity, you know, kind of wrecked their lives, you might say. And then they'd cry and whine, and God would bail them out again, over and over and over again. What do you suppose our chances are of doing what we're doing and getting away with it? And what are the chances are when we look around and see what's happening? You know, the nation has totally lost its respect. You know, nobody respects this country anymore. Nobody respects the leadership in this country anymore. Anybody knows that when we draw a line in the sand, it doesn't mean anything. You just walk right on past it, and they'll draw another line, and they'll walk on past that, and we'll draw another line. That doesn't mean anything. That's all we do. So everybody knows that. Why do you suppose Russia is flexing its muscles like it is? Why do you suppose China is flexing its muscles like it is? It's because it knows. It doesn't have any competition. There's nobody going to stop it or back down or back them down. So so there's a war on God. If you haven't read all the articles in the last Good News, do that as soon as you can. It really, really is an eye opener. So as people's behavior continues to degenerate as time marches on and the end gets closer, there's other prophecies that indicate that drastic changes in weather patterns, which will result in famines, are a tool God used in the past and a tool that he's using and will continue to use, and probably to a greater detail in the future, to get the attention of a increasingly rebellious society, humankind. If you haven't read Deuteronomy 28 and Leviticus 26 for a while, it'd be a good time to do it. I wish we had time to look at it today, but we don't. Blessing and cursing, where God says, if you do this, these good things will happen to you. And if you don't do these things, there's a bad things that will happen to you. If you kind of notice on Deuteronomy chapter 28, the blessings are about maybe a fourth of the chapter. The cursings are about three-fourths of the chapter. When it says, I will do all these things to you if you don't follow my ways, it's several pages of the scriptures that describe what God has in mind for anyone that thinks that they're going to get away with thumbing their nose at him. We talked about disease epidemics. Now, the Ebola, you know, we hear all about Ebola now. That's the big thing that we hear about. But medical researchers have noticed a growing development in recent years, and it's the sudden emergence of all kinds of disease epidemics that we thought were done for. And a lot of those things have popped up. AIDS, of course, that was garnered a huge amount of headlines, and rightfully so, because that devastating entire countries in sheer numbers has claimed more lives than the bubonic plague or the Black Death in medieval Europe. And of course, the AIDS would not be a factor if people behaved themselves. You know, if people acted like they were supposed to act, you know, if people would say, you know, read the scriptures and tell how, you know, people are supposed to live and get rid of the homosexuality and those kind of things, well, AIDS wouldn't have even been a problem. But, of course, nobody lives by those things and, you know, by God's instruction. So what happens? Well, you have something like AIDS. AIDS is only one of those plagues that people worry about. There's all kinds of other things that have popped up. You know, you hear of Legionnaire's disease, and there's all kinds of other fevers and viruses and so forth. But Ebola is of course, another one that stuck its head up here just recently. But some of those have resisted treatment, or science can't cure them because they spread so fast and they kill so quickly that it's hard for scientists to get a handle on just how to deal with some of these things. I don't know if you saw the news or not. Just the other day, one of the TV stations said that, of course, Minnesota, you know, huge Somalian population up in the Twin Cities. I think there's 30 million or so, or something. It's a lot of people up there. So I think there's a lot of traveling that goes back and forth between Africa and the people in this state here. But it said that they were watching 48 people in the state of Minnesota for Ebola. And there was 21 more that they wish they could find, that they would like to be watching, but they don't know where they are. So who knows what's going to happen? I mean, you know, we keep being assured that it's all under control and everything is going to be just fine and not to worry and everything like that. And hopefully they will get it all under control. I hope they do. But what's the chances the government's got things they're not telling us? I mean, you figure that out for yourself. But there's drug-resistant strains of a lot of these old drugs. Tuberculosis pops its head up again. Bubonic plague and polio. When I was a kid, everybody's afraid to death of polio. When I was a kid, one of my friends was one of the neighbor kids my age. The family had three sons, you know, one older and one younger. Then the middle kid was about my age, and I hung around with him a lot. But his mother was just paranoid about polio. You know, the kids couldn't get too tired. They couldn't, you know, just all she talked about was polio. And then, of course, it came along with the sock vaccine and all those things. And polio was a thing of the past. And it was a bad thing. You know, people would get polio. They end up in these iron lungs and look like an awful existence. And so she got me afraid of it. I mean, you know, she was so paranoid and got everybody else around her afraid of it. But polio, we've heard about polio sticking its head up again. A lot of these diseases that have been conquered, you know, malaria, cholera, are actually popping up again. And then I mentioned about the 20 million people that died in 1918 and 1919 during World War I. 2.5 times as many people as died in the war itself. The 20th century saw skyrocketing rates of diseases that's probably our own fault. You know, people, the diets, you know, where we eat mountains of sugar and eat drink mountains of soda pop, and people smoke cigarettes. You know, I think smoking has kind of decreased somewhat, but still, smoking is bad for your health. I think my own brother-in-law died last spring because I have no doubt he'd be alive today if he hadn't smoked 3 packs a day for 60 years. I think he took it. It did him in. Or people use drugs or drug abuse or all these different things that people do that can bring diseases upon themselves, you know. And then keep in mind that breakdown of the social structure that results from war and famine and no doubt could lead to massive and widespread disease epidemics. You know, a lot of times famines lead to disease epidemics. Chemical weapons, biological weapons, smallpox and anthrax. And then we talked about how terrorists could sneak in with that stuff. And it doesn't seem like it's very hard to get into this country. You know, when you've got millions of illegal people that are here illegally, it can't be all that hard to get into this country. So how hard would it be for somebody that had a mind to sneak in with, you know, carrying some disease or something like we talked about? So that's another possibility when we consider how some of these biblical prophecies could be carried out. And it talks about earthquakes in many places. Scientists pretty much understand how earthquakes work. You know, the center of the earth is molten, extremely hot, melted rock. And the skin, you might say, the skin that we live on is kind of like described as a cracked eggshell. And it's always moving and floating around on this molten lava. And when these forces push and grind together, it causes enormous, enormous pressures, unimaginable pressures. And when they reach a certain point, they'll slip or slide or want to go up or want to go down or something will happen, and you'll get the earth shaking, or maybe it opens up a passage and the hot molten lava comes squirting out and there's your volcanoes. And all those things happen from time to time. We have, of course, there's an earthquake zone that we talk about, you know, the fault lines, but you've probably heard about the Ring of Fire. You know, the Ring of Fire, that's where lots and lots of earthquakes and volcanoes are. It's much of the U.S., West Coast, Italy, Southeastern Europe, Turkey, Philippines, Taiwan, Indonesia, Japan. That whole area, if you kind of look on a map, it's called the Ring of Fire. And that's where the vast majority of volcanoes and so forth are in this country, or in the world. But are natural disasters and earthquakes and so forth increasing as Jesus Christ foretold that they were going to? Well, we've already read Matthew chapter 24, verses 7 and 8, but Jesus Christ told signs that would mark the time leading up to his return. It says, for nation rise against nation. We read that, kingdom against kingdom, and there will be famines and pestilences. And then it says, and earthquakes in various places. Now, we've seen some pretty nasty earthquakes in recent years. I think all of us probably remember that big earthquake off Indonesia, one of the very most powerful earthquakes that happened in a long, long time. And it sent that huge tsunami that took 300,000 lives. Remember that huge tsunami flooded flooded Indonesia? 300,000 people gone. And then a year later, there's another big earthquake in Asia, and it killed another 30,000 people. And then you probably remember that one not too long ago, that big earthquake out under the ocean, and it caused that huge tsunami that went into Japan and floated away all so much property. And then, you know, the big thing there was that nuclear reactor that it wrecked, and they had so much trouble getting that under control. So there's been a lot of those things. But you know, in Matthew chapter 24 and verse 7, maybe I can just zip back there really quick, but Matthew chapter 24 and verse 7, Matthew chapter 24 verse 7, and it says, for nation shall rise against nation, kingdom against kingdom, and there will be famines, pestilence, and earthquakes in various places. We read about that already. But the word that's translated earthquake is seismos. And that's from a word that in English we have, you know, like seismograph, you know, the instrument that measures earthquake strength and so forth. seismology, it's a study of earthquakes. But the interesting thing about that word, in Strong's, it defines it as a commotion. And then some examples of that is a gale, or a commotion in the air, or on the ground, where it describes an earthquake, or tempest. So seismos has a much broader meaning than just the earth shaking in that we read about in Matthew chapter 8, we have the account of Jesus' disciples being on that boat out in that sea, and this big storm came up. Remember that? And the ship was, you know, they were afraid. They thought they were going to sink. They thought they were going to die. Well, Jesus was just taking a nap, so they woke him up. And they said, save us, help us, this boat's going to sink. And he's kind of, I don't know what kind of look he gave him, but he just, you know, he just commanded the wind to stop and the sea calmed down. And then they kind of wondered, he said, who is this anyhow? All you can do is tell the winds to stop. Well, anyhow, the word that's translated the tempest there is that same word that's translated earthquake in Matthew. So it has a greater meaning than just earthquake. The word that's used in Matthew 8 and verse 24, I don't know, maybe I can just go back there real quick. Matthew chapter 8, verse 24. And suddenly a great tempest arose on the sea so that the boat was covered with the waves, but he was asleep. So that's the scripture that talks about Christ being asleep. And it says the waves covering the boat. So it was probably a pretty bad storm. It's probably a pretty bad storm. And Christ said, but the word that's used there is the same word that's used for earthquake. It applies also, not only to just earthquakes, it does apply to earthquakes, but it also applies to hurricanes, it applies to tornadoes, and all kinds of other, you know, deadly storms. I've been in straight line winds that they say were 85 miles an hour. And that's an awful, awful wind, I'll tell you. And they talk about hurricanes where the winds are twice that. And I can't imagine. I mean, you would no way be able to stand out in a 160-mile-an-hour wind and stay on your feet. It'd blow you away like a leaf. How can anything stand up against something that's powerful? But we've seen hurricanes recently. How about Katrina? Those storms were tremendously destructive. You know, Katrina, as they say, took about 1,200 lives, $200 billion in damages. And that doesn't even take into account the losses from shipping, oil and gas production, fishing and agriculture. And they say that the city of New Orleans will never really fully recover from that storm. But you know what? You know what the very first thing, one of the very first things that New Orleans did after the storm was over with and they began to straighten the thing out, they said, we've got to get this city back in running again, so they got Mardi Gras going. You know, one of the first things they did. So it says one thing, they didn't learn much. They didn't know where that destructive storm was coming from, and they went right back to, I've never been to Mardi Gras, but I've seen pictures of what happens, and it looks pretty gross, really. Pretty gross. It says the Hurricane Katrina was Category 5. That means that winds were probably 160 miles an hour or more. And it also means, it said that they pushed walls of water about 20 feet high. So if you've got a wind that I can't even imagine, 160 mile an hour winds and a 20-foot wall of water come rushing up on a city, there's no way there's any could be any much of anything left of it. And they're actually wasn't, really wasn't. Now, here's the question, though. Are these disasters increasing like Jesus said they would? Well, there's an article in the Science magazine and it's reports by some scientists at the Georgia Institute of Technology and also from the National Center of Atmospheric Research. And they concluded that while a total number of hurricanes and cyclones had not significantly increased, the numbers hadn't significantly increased, but there was a sharp increase during the past 35 years of the number of Category 4 and 5 tropical cyclones, which, of course, are the most powerful, the most destructive storms. So the frequency of the most dangerous and damaging storms hadn't increased that much, but there was an 80% increase since the 1970s of the very, very powerful storms. Numbers hadn't increased so much, but the intensity had increased by about the very destructive storms increased by about 80%. And I don't know if you've been watching the weather or the news. I got to quit here pretty quick. But there's a big storm that's heading towards Alaska. Did you see that? It said that from rim to rim, it's 800 miles across. 800 miles across. And it said that when that thing hits, the winds were only 100 miles an hour. I say only 100 miles an hour because, like I said, I was in an 85-mile-an-hour wind, and I thought that was that's enough for me. And that did damage. And so they said, well, it's only 100-mile-an-hour winds so far, so that's a lot of wind. But there's 30-foot waves that those winds are pushing. So I don't know what's going to happen up there. And it says it's going to be driving the jet stream way down. That's why this cold weather is going to be coming down upon us. So so we should make us sit up and take notice. We should take notice of what's going on in this world around us. Everything that Jesus said to watch. Later in Jesus Christ's prophecy that is recorded in Luke chapter 21, verse 25. Let's look at that. Luke chapter 21, 25. Matthew and then Mark and then Luke. Luke 21. Luke chapter 21 and verse 25. Okay, Luke 21, 25. Here's what it says. Okay. And there will be signs in the sun and in the moon and in the stars and on the earth distress of nations with perplexity, the sea and the waves. Men's hearts failing them for fear and the expectation of those things which are coming on the earth. For the powers of heavens will be shaken. And then they shall see the Son of Man coming in a cloud with power and great glory. And now when these things begin to happen, look up and lift up your heads because your redemption draws near. So that's a good advice for us when we look around. And we look around and see what's happened in the last 100 years. And even now as the time of the Christ's return draws nearer and nearer and nearer. And we'll see things get worse, not better. I can predict that. We're not going to see things get better, especially when you see what's going on in society, what's going on in the government, what's going on with the war against God. I think the hammer has started coming down, and I don't think it's going to stop. It's not going to get better. God's patience will run out. And I think it's clear now that the only way that this nation or any other nation in the world will learn you can't insult God and not pay a very heavy price is to suffer the consequences. Luke chapter 21 and verse 31. Luke chapter 21, 31. And then we're done. So you likewise, when you see these things happening, know that the kingdom of God is near. Assuredly, I say to you, this generation will by no means pass till all things are fulfilled. Heaven and earth will pass away, but my words will by no means pass away. Take heed for yourselves, lest your hearts be weighed down with carousing, drunkenness, the cares of this life, and the day comes on you unexpected. For it will be as a snare on all those who dwell on the face of the whole earth. Watch therefore and pray always that you may be counted worthy to escape all these things that will come to pass, and to stand before the Son of Man. God help us to heed those words.